This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 28th of October 2022. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And John Parvin.
Hello.
The first thing to say is that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 861 229. And that's the number that you can find on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Care home facing threat of demolition. Delight as true local Sunak heads for number 10 and fatal crash. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Care home facing threat of demolition. The site of a 64-bed Winchester care home has been earmarked for demolition as part of multi-million pound plans to shift the ageing building to a developer. Industrial consultancy company Knight Frank has listed the land, which is currently occupied by St Cross Grange, for £5,500,000 on Rightmove. As previously reported by the Chronicle, staff and residents at the care home are due to move to a new specialised dementia facility in St Giles Hill in the new year. St Giles View, which will open in the autumn, will be operated by Brendan Care and is complete with 60 purpose-built ensuite bedrooms, as well as a cafe and restaurant, hair and beauty salon and communal spaces. St Cross Grange in St Cross Road was built more than 150 years ago, with a history of providing social support and care to older people in Winchester since the 1930s, as well as housing soldiers during World War II. However, issues with the building have seen it become unsuitable in the long term. Shona King, Director of Business Development at Greensleeves, the company which runs St Cross Grange, said, "The current building would have required extensive structural repair to provide longevity. That work would have meant closing the care home for a significant amount of time and having to look for temporary alternatives for residents and colleagues, which would have impacted their daily lives." Miss King said fellow charity Brendan Care felt like a really close fit, adding that the move is the best possible solution for residents. She said, "We have been jointly consulting everybody throughout, and they're all looking forward to this beautiful purpose-built facility. Nobody has decided to move out. This will provide continuity and familiarity with staff, which will allow us to continue to deliver the highest standard of care possible. The building was most recently extended in 2013 to provide specialist dementia care. The original part of the property is a Victorian villa. As part of the listing, Knight Franks said, "The building currently has some structural defects that require remedial work. We anticipate that an incoming purchaser is likely to demolish the existing building to make way for new development. It is expected to become vacant in the first quarter of 2023, once the build of St Giles View is complete and all residents have been relocated." Patrick Davies, former Labour City Councillor and long-serving member of the Planning Committee, said, "This area is an extremely sensitive wooded site immediately opposite St Cross Hospital and Park. It is at the edge of the water meadows and open countryside. It adjoins Bushfield Down, which is threatened with development in the draft local plan. In my view, serious consideration must be given to retaining and converting the existing buildings at St Cross Grange to other residential uses, with the preservation of the landscaping and tree cover of the site."
Delight as true local Sunak heads for number 10. MPs have hailed Prime Minister Rishi Sunak as one of our own after the Southampton-born politician completed a spectacular comeback to claim the top job. Mr Sunak, who was once head boy at Winchester College, won the Tory leadership race on Monday when rival Penny Mordaunt failed to win the backing of MPs. He has since warned his warring MPs the Conservatives must unite or die, as he ruled out opposition demands for a general election. Liz Truss, who'd made way for Mr Sunak less than 2 months after she beat him in the last contest, congratulated her successor and told him, "You have my full support." With his victory coming on Diwali, Mr Sunak will be the UK's first Hindu Prime Minister, the first of Asian heritage, and the youngest for more than 200 years at the age of 42. Steve Bryan said, "Huge congratulations to Rishi Sunak on becoming our new leader and Prime Minister. As I said to ITV News Meridian, everything about this feels right. I am delighted we have a true Winchester local in number 10 who is one of the nicest people in politics. He will bring measured calm and stability at exactly the right moment for our country." Caroline Noakes said, "Proud to have nominated Southampton's own Rishi Sunak, and also proud of the positive campaign Penny Mordaunt from Portsmouth ran. Obviously the right result in this South Coast derby, but now we come together."
Fatal crash. A woman died in a car crash near Winchester. The crash, involving a Mazda sports car and a Boxer van, happened at 11:50 a.m. on Tuesday at the Cart and Horses near Kingsworthy. The junction has a poor safety record. A woman and man in their 70s were taken to hospital, where the female later died. The police are appealing for witnesses. It caused major congestion on local roads.
Thank you. Very short one there, John. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow up with question comment. Here are the family announcements. Button, David John, passed away peacefully at home on the 3rd of October 2022, aged 57 years. Canning, Bessie Ann, peacefully at the Dower House Nursing Home on the 1st of October 2022, aged 97 years. Costard, Richard, passed away peacefully at home on Saturday, the 15th of October, 2022, aged 84 years. Fenwick, Ron, sadly passed away on the 12th of October, 2022, aged 79 years. Reynolds, Christopher John, now reunited with his younger brother Spencer. May they rest in peace together. Rose, Michael Gordon, known as Mike, sadly passed away on the 9th of October, 2022, aged 72 years. Ross, Anne Sinclair, died peacefully on the morning of 19th of October at St. James Retirement Hotel, Cape Town, aged 83. Ward, Elizabeth Catherine Emma, née Sharp, passed away peacefully in comfort at Abbots Barton Care Home on the 11th of October, 2022. Christian comment has been written by Liz Tatham this week. She is praying for the new Prime Minister. Thank you, Daphne.
Radio 4's Any Questions last weekend inevitably asked the panel's opinion on our outgoing Prime Minister and whether they felt sorry for her. In amongst the criticism and character analysis, there was one comment that stood out for me. One of her colleagues said that when he had worked for her as a very junior minister some years ago, she was always very kind to him. In a different context, I read in one of the Sunday newspapers that all the rather cloying references to kindness we read on T-shirts and fridge magnets have diluted the notion of being kind. Well, I would like to disagree. If anyone described me or anything I did as kind, I would breathe a sigh of relief through anything else I may have done that I'm ashamed of or wish I hadn't done. One act of kindness, a kindly word, a calming, kind comment in the midst of criticism can make such a difference to someone's day, life, or idea of themselves. Think of times it has happened to you, and you have been grateful to someone cutting through the heat of shame or critical comments or loneliness by saying something kind about you. It shines through the darkness. In last Sunday's Gospel, we heard the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. The former was full of himself and his adherence to the law, a pillar of society. The tax collector beat his breast before God and asked for mercy, and this was given. I tell you, the latter went home justified, not the former, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted, said Jesus in Luke 18, verse 14. So we can be upright upholders of the law and leading members of society, church, organisation, or whatever we hold as important. But unless we can see ourselves as God sees us and be humble and self-examining in that light, it is all meaningless. If we start with a kind and well-intentioned heart, the rest will follow, not the other way round. Today is a day of history. For the first time, we have a Prime Minister from Asia, a Hindu, who today celebrate Diwali, the Festival of Light. In the many commentaries on our new leader, I read of his first experience of racism when he, as a teenager, was in a restaurant with his younger siblings. He was shocked by the extremely unkind and racist words of fellow diners and said that it probably wouldn't happen in the UK today. Well, let us hope he is right, because his religion's festival day today is about light and joy. It is a fortuitous day for him as he takes up his office as first among equals. Let us pray for him and for harmony in government and among all of us who live in the country where the majority are welcoming and kind. I think I will just try to be those things.
Thank you, Daphne. I've only got a few letters to the editor this week. Nick, can you start us off with best outcomes, please?
Yes, this is a letter from one of our county councillors about the ongoing saga of the closure of Andover Road. Regarding council's dispute responsibility for closure of Andover Road and diversion through King's Barton housing estate, I read with interest the above article reporting comments made by the leader of Winchester City Council online Tuesday, October the 18th, Chronicle, October the 20th. The King's Barton development was given planning permission in 2012 by the then Secretary of State for the Department of Communities and Local Government. Hampshire County Council, as highway authority, was not the determining authority for this matter. The decision to close Andover Road was reached via a planning appeal heard by a government planning inspector. The County Council cannot lawfully undo this planning decision, and on this occasion has no power to direct the developer or Winchester City Council, as the local planning authority, to keep Andover Road open to all traffic. In planning process terms, the changes requested by the Residents Association would need to be voluntarily agreed by Carla Holmes and the local planning authority, Winchester City Council. The County Council is open-minded as to alternative access options for Andover Road, particularly in light of new growth options north of Barton Farm and the identified need for a northern park and ride site for Winchester. To that end, the County Council will continue to work constructively with Winchester City Council to assist in its discussions with Carla Holmes to help facilitate the best outcomes for the existing and future residents of Winchester. I trust this clarifies the position for your readers. And that letter is from Councillor Edward Heron, Executive Lead Member for Transport and Environment Strategy, Hampshire County Council.
Roads and Reason. On a couple of occasions now, readers have suggested that my comments in your September the 29th edition were in favour of the closure of Andover Road. As a reminder of what I actually said, having two main roads running in parallel would be an act of insanity in terms of urban planning and traffic planning. You can't have both. That makes no sense at all. Either Andover Road needs to change, or the plans for Winchester Avenue need to change. I continue to believe you can't leave both as they are. It has also been suggested that the proposed Winchester Avenue will zigzag through the estate, which is either deliberately dishonest or suggests that your correspondent hasn't looked at the agreed plans. If it did zigzag through the estate, there would be less of a problem, but that isn't what the County Council and Secretary of State have signed off. The most recent letter even suggested that there will be parked vehicles and roadworks along the route, which indicates that not only has the correspondent not looked at the plans, they haven't visited the estate either, where the side roads intended to manage parking and deliveries are in place for all to see, where there is a wide swale and a separate delivery road between Winchester Avenue and residents' front doors. And there is no intention to allow any parking or deliveries from the road itself. As I wrote to Councillor Heron, the county councillor responsible for Hampshire's road network, on September the 22nd, there is not an agreed and coherent proposal for the road system in North Winchester. I have since spoken to Councillor Heron and made it clear that the City Council is very willing to meet with Hampshire and Carla Holmes to find a way forward. But we will not find that way forward unless we are honest about the challenges we face in sorting out the road system in the north of our city and stop pretending that opening Andover Road can work on its own without a wider plan to tackle all the problems that need sorting out. And this is from Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council.
Now, this next letter comes from Rose Burns, and it's on behalf of the group Friends of River Park. Friends of River Park feel pretty aggrieved that not only has Councillor Todd told everybody that our challenge is a waste of time, but that the decision at the High Court found that the decision was legally correct. This is not accurate. The learned judge found, effectively, that it didn't matter if the council's decision was lawful or not, because it was, quotes, academic. She cited the council's barrister, who said that the council didn't wish to enter into an arid legal dispute, and they had committed to act lawfully from now on. So that led to the refusal of leave for us to pursue a judicial review. We naturally wish to appeal this decision because it gives licence to the council to continue making unlawful decisions and then to correct them retrospectively if and when someone is brave or rash enough to challenge them. We would remind them that this is the 20th or perhaps the 21st legal challenge to their decision making since the Silver Hill debacle in 2015. The learned judge also said words to the effect that it is not the role of the court to challenge public authorities. What is the judicial review process for, if not to challenge the unlawfulness of a council's administrative process? With regard to costs, the council has brought this procedure upon themselves by failing to consult the public about their plans and by forging ahead without any notice to anyone with selling publicly owned land which has been used for public recreation since it was acquired in 1902 as part of the King Alfred millennial celebrations. Moreover, our costs of over £3,500 for the first salvo, when the council thanked us for reminding them of the statutory obligation to advertise the site, quashed their decision and began again, have not been reimbursed by the council. It would save everyone's time and money if the council admitted that these plans are a mistake and a bad deal for Winchester's residents and conceded that we should think again about River Park. And as I said, that's from Rose Burns on behalf of Friends of River Park, Hyde, Winchester.
And I've got another one here on the same subject from Judith Martin. It's time to be open and upfront about the River Park saga. The whole thing was launched with an untruth. On the 23rd of November last year, a paper from Councillor Learney went to Cabinet, CAB 3324, if anyone would like to check, which started, "The University of Southampton have approached the council to express interest in acquiring the River Park Leisure Centre site fronting Gordon Road." At the time, this struck me as unlikely, as the university was still sitting on its purchase of the old police site and had done nothing significant with it. While the university's website has a page on its development plans, there was no mention of any development in Winchester. I duly put in a Freedom of Information request to the university, asking who had initiated the discussion and when. The university responded that it did not hold this information. It added that key staff members involved in the discussions at the time of the first legal challenge in December 2021 are not currently employed by the university. In reply to my request for a review, the General Counsel and University Secretary said, "I am unable to provide an explanation as to why there is no record of the information. I can only confirm that it is not there, and the individuals who were responsible for this project at the relevant time are no longer with the university. Their email accounts were deleted in line with our data protection procedures, and I can only speculate that they did not deem this information to be of sufficient importance to ensure that it was retained, if indeed it ever existed in their records. And that astonishing admission would seem to be the end of it. However, in about May, I looked again at the university website, and there on the building projects page, quite possibly prompted by my inquiries, I found this. The university has been approached by Winchester City Council to consider further development on the former River Park Leisure Centre site, adjacent to existing Winchester School of Arts site. Well, both sides can't be telling the truth. And that letter is from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Slight change of topic here. MP's principles. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine tells us on his website that he is passionate about the green agenda, which drove him towards a career in politics from a very early age. In 2019, he campaigned on a Conservative Party manifesto that was against fracking. He tells us he is a principled MP. So you'd think that he would oppose the Truss government's policy reversal of allowing fracking. But no. On Thursday the 19th of October, he voted with the Truss government against a ban on fracking. 40 of his Tory colleagues abstained, including Chris Skidmore, Truss's net zero czar. Why didn't he at least join them? When his words and actions so clearly seem to collide, can we trust him? And this is from Charles Tallack, Berwick Avenue, Week, Winchester.
Daphne, have you got another letter for us?
Yes. New home for Private Eye Archive. When the UK surprisingly voted to leave the EU in June 2016, I thought the next couple of years would be interesting. So I began regularly collecting copies of The Week and Private Eye. 6 years later, this has become a fascinating archive of 6 years of ever-increasing chaos. It is so easy to forget the drama of Theresa May's premiership. At least she was principled and well-intentioned and sensible enough to put the Brexiteers in charge of making Brexit happen. They were to own the inevitable problems. Her hopes of a workable compromise died in the election of 2017. Johnson's undermining of her authority and subsequent takeover as PM began an ever-fasting descent to the denouement of his ousting and the current farce. Sadly, the archive has expanded to the point where we no longer have space, and I feel it would be more use if it made available to a wider audience. If you or your readers can help in finding a new home, I would be happy to deliver the magazines in bound volumes. And that comes from Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And our last letter, entitled Marital Status, comes from Tom Williams, one of our very own WTN presenters and readers. In your edition of October the 20th, you reported on a case before the High Court and found it editorially necessary to mention that the judge in the case is the spouse of a prominent politician. This did not seem to me to have any relevance to the case being reported, and unless you intend to discuss the marital arrangements of every judge in cases you report, it must be assumed that you intended readers to infer that this particular judgment was affected by the marital arrangements of the judge in question. I hope this is not so. And it's from Tom Williams, Hairstock Road.
Thank you. That's all the letters. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news at hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you could write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we'll carry on with the editorial comment. Have your say, letter from Westminster, I'm sorry, and Belgarum. The editor heads up her article this week with "Time for another look at Road Junction." For decades, local people have complained about the danger of the junction of the A33 Basingstoke Road and the B3047 near the Cart and Horses pub. Campaigners have called for the road safety to be improved, either by a set of traffic lights or a roundabout. The Highways Authority, the County Council, has resisted calls for improvements, arguing that the accident record does not warrant it. The accident on Tuesday saw all emergency services deployed, as well as the air ambulance. At the time of writing, it was unclear exactly how severe the latest crash is, but it would appear to be serious, judging by the number of emergency crews needed at the scene. This junction is clearly not fit for purpose, as anyone can testify who has been unfortunate enough to have to negotiate its confusing layout. Thousands of people have to every day. Surely the time has come for authorities to take another look here, especially as Winchester continues to grow and traffic increases. Now, Kimberly Barber is having her say this week. Here's John.
Should people be allowed to comment freely online? And who should take responsibility when a comment oversteps common decency? There are questions I'm often asked as editor of several newspaper websites, as well as social media accounts. There are often times when comments come close to the line. NewsQuest, the business which owns the Hampshire Chronicle, has a policy of allowing comments to be made on its stories. The default position is that all stories are open, except in truly exceptional cases, for example, a murder trial or a suicide inquest. Readers can sign up for accounts and choose their usernames, then comment underneath stories. Most act sensibly and treat the forum with respect. However, there are a few who abuse the system. Allowing this function gives our readers the chance to have their say and for them to read what others think, plus it encourages people to look at the comment section and come back to that story multiple times. As a newspaper that's largely what we want people to be, which is largely what we want people to be reading and talking about our stories, and it's also a great way for us to gauge public opinion. It would be an impossible task for us to preview all these comments before they are posted, given that we are a small team. But we do have a responsibility in law to moderate these comments quickly. Most are moderated instantly, and ones that clearly break terms, such as spam comments, are quick to be taken down centrally. Others that require a bit more local knowledge or are more nuanced in the offence are flagged up to our local team via email, and one of us will read through and then either allow the comment or delete it. Readers can flag any comment for moderation, and we are genuinely grateful when they do. When we delete a comment, there's an option to delete just that one comment or to ban and block the user, removing all their previous comments. The most extreme banning and blocking is not something we have to do regularly, thankfully. I'm not sure whether it's the thrill of creating seemingly unrecognisable username that prompts people into posting nasty comments, or whether they would do it anyway, regardless of the name. Whatever the truth is, some of the most vicious hide behind fake names and fake profiles. They create email addresses in order to create accounts. Certain topics provoke more discussion than others, and politics seems to prove the most emotive. You only have to look at the comments around Liz Truss. MPs and elected councillors seem to be rightly or wrongly fair game. Many feel it is their right, having voted or not voted for them, to be able to say what they like about them. Winchester MP Steve Brine often faces criticism in the comment section of the Hampshire Chronicle. It's a topic he has even discussed at the Department of Digital, Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee. He has previously told me that he is amazed at how open the comment section is and how anonymous people are allowed to be. But the problem of defamatory comments does not stop there. It only gets worse when it crosses over to social media. Like our comments section, where people can create accounts after they've been blocked, the same issue exists on social media, except that it's often without the same level of moderation. But who is really to blame here? Should it be up to the site to better moderate? Or should we be tackling the source? Do people understand the consequences of defamation? Does the pensioner commenting from her living room after a glass of wine on her iPad realise that her comment is being broadcast to the world? That her sneering comment, probably better reserved for her best friend, has been published and could be read by everyone? People can be quick to shoot the messenger, but should we really be going to the source and educating people on how to behave online? In my view, if you wouldn't walk into your local pub and make that comment loudly to the assembled audience, then you really shouldn't be saying it online.
Now, the Winchester MP Steve Brine has a few words for us this week. I wonder what he's been up to. Daphne?
Yes, this is his letter from Westminster. A kind correspondent this summer told me how I always choose the wrong candidate when my party picks a leader. It is true I backed Jeremy Hunt in 2019 when he stood against Boris Johnson, and I campaigned for Rishi Sunak against Liz Truss. I would contest that while history records I did not support the winner in either case, I didn't back the wrong guy, and I stand by both of them. Fortunately, second chances do exist, and we now have both Jeremy and Rishi in Downing Street. I am delighted. Both are friends, among the nicest people in politics, and they will bring calm. Our new Prime Minister was right to say in his first statement that our country is facing a profound economic crisis. The aftermath of COVID still lingers, while Putin's war in Ukraine has destabilised energy markets and supply chains the world over. He was also typically gracious in thanking his two immediate predecessors for their contribution, but wise to admit mistakes were made. Rishi has been elected as leader of my party and your Prime Minister, in part, to fix them. Jeremy Hunt has already begun that work, and he will form a solid team with his new boss. They will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda, and this will mean difficult decisions to come. But you saw this PM during COVID doing everything he could to protect people and businesses with schemes like furlough. There are always limits, more so now than ever. But Rishi will bring that same compassion to the challenges we face today. His government will not leave the next generation, your children and grandchildren, with a debt to settle that we were too weak to pay ourselves. As he said this week, I will unite this country not with words, but with action. And I know this government will have integrity, professionalism and accountability at every level. Trust is earned and we have work to do. Some people say there should be a general election now. They didn't say that when Tony Blair handed over to Gordon Brown, but they'd have been wrong then, as now, if they had. The mandate my party earned in 2019, when you elected me for a fourth time, is not the sole property of any one individual. It derives from commanding a majority in the Commons. And the heart of that mandate is our manifesto. As Rishi made clear, we will deliver on it. A stronger NHS, better schools, safer streets, protecting our environment and supporting our armed forces. Levelling up was not a Boris mission, it is a national mission, and we will build an economy where businesses invest, innovate and create jobs. I understand how difficult this moment is for my constituents. After the billions of pounds it cost to combat COVID, after all the dislocation that has been caused in the midst of a terrible war, times are tough. Good politicians reach out and put your needs above politics. We did that in the Conservative-Liberal coalition, and we will do it again now. Some people say, for their own partisan advantage, the government has disappeared down some ideological right-wing rabbit hole. And for a while, there it was, an argument that landed. Not anymore. The One Nation element of the government is back in control. And while I appreciate that's disappointing for some, it's great news for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, and it's great news for our country. From Steve Bryan.
And now we have two pieces from Belgarum this week. Is that right, Nick?
Yes, two very different pieces, it has to be said. The first one comes from one of our own, entitled Face to Face with Putin's Brutal War. A Briton living in Ukraine has described a sense of violation he will never get over after bombing continued in the country's capital city. James Canning Cook, an investor who co-owns Mitchell Dever-based sales and marketing firm Opus Growth Partners, has been living in Kiev for the past 7 years and witnessed a Russian cruise missile attack. He was getting out of bed at about 8:15 a.m. when he heard the missile and witnessed it from his seventh floor balcony explode 700 feet away. A cruise missile had just flown over my house and exploded no more than 700 feet away to the left, which is quite a surprise, and on a Monday morning, put it that way, he told PA News Agency. So I just grabbed a dressing gown and went down the stairs into the area at the bottom of the lift, which is generally more structurally sound if one of these horrible things does hit the building, and I just hoped for the best. Russian President Vladimir Putin has been internationally criticised over a new wave of missile and drone attacks on Ukrainian cities. Despite wanting to stay in Kiev and continue running his consultancy business, Opus Growth Partners, Mr. Canning Cook is going to leave the capital and stay in a remote cabin because his family are concerned for his safety. And there's two pictures which go with that piece. One showing a crater being examined by civilians in an inner city setting, looks like in a small park. And another picture of Mr. Canning Cook. And in the background, just behind him, the signs of fire, looking as though it's just following an explosion, and tall 6 or 7 storey buildings behind the site of the explosion. So, the second Belgarum piece is titled Unfixed Leak Makes Mockery of Hosepipe Ban. A resident has highlighted an ongoing water leak amid Southern Water's push to save water. A water leak at the top of Winchester High Street is due to be repaired after leaking for weeks amid the current hosepipe ban. Howard Annesley from Northwood Park in Sparsholt said, "Given the hosepipe ban is still in place, I wonder if Southern Water could give some attention and priority to attend a leak in the High Street that has been ongoing for some number of weeks and would go some way to their action plan of saving water." Southern Water said that repairs were scheduled for Monday night. And there's a picture to go with that one as well of a pavement, which looks as though it's in the upper High Street, and it's wet. However, it's unclear from the picture whether it's because it's been raining or because of the leak.
Thank you, Dick. Now let's have a look at what's on in the region. There's not very many this week. On Sunday at the Theatre Royal, the comedian Milton Jones is on in Milton Impossible. That's at 7:30. On Monday, well, this sounds nice, there's a Halloween guided walking tour, a Halloween feast of ghosts and other ghastly goings on, adults only. And this starts at Winchester Tourist Information Centre at the Guildhall at 8 o'clock, and tickets for that are £10. On Wednesday the 2nd, Dr. Richard Shepherd, who is a forensic pathologist, is appearing at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street, Winchester, at 7:30. It'll be interesting. And J.D. King is performing at the Plaza Theatre in Romsey on Friday the 4th. And Saturday the 5th, Blancmange, appearing at 8:30 at the Brook in Southampton. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 29th of October, the sun will set at 5:45 p.m. And on Wednesday the 2nd of November, the sun will rise at 6:59 a.m. and will set at 4:38 p.m. I should add, of course, that the seeming hour discrepancy between those two lighting up times is caused probably because the clocks change on Saturday night. The clocks go back an hour. So remember to change your clocks. And now on to items of general news. John, would you like to kick us off, please?
Certainly. Young and old go green. More than 70 events coordinated by 50 organisations made up the fifth instalment of Winchester's recent Green Week. The event saw more than 3,000 people took part in the City Festival with events such as Swap Shop, Sustainable Fashion Show, Climate Cafes, Art Exhibitions, Planting, Recycle Sunday, the Mass Cycle Ride, and Winchester's Repair Cafes launch. Winchester Green Week organiser and the Executive Director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, Joe Crocker, said Winchester Green Week is about participation, remembering or relearning our connectedness, collaboration in the face of something bigger than anyone can tackle alone, and an expectation that something new can and will emerge. Thank you to everyone who has been part of it. Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said the range of events during Green Week this year was amazing, with something to interest and involve everyone. Participation was really good, A highlight for me was taking part in the mass bike ride with hundreds of other cyclists, young and old, from Winchester and local villages cycling round the town. The strength of Green Week is that it shows the passion residents have for action on the climate crisis, reducing our impact on the planet and improving our natural environment. It shows that local councils, public organisations and businesses ignore green issues at their peril.
And here's an item about a young lad called Joe Wilkinson, and he's a budding Winchester explorer, taking his thirst for adventure to new heights as he prepares for the trip of a lifetime by climbing St Catherine's Hill more than 40 times. Joe Wilkinson, 16, has been selected to join the British Exploring Society, that's BES, on a five-week expedition to Kyrgyzstan in 2023. While away, the Compton resident will team up with 40 other like-minded teens at a camp in the Atbash mountain range to conduct scientific, conservation and media projects. After a lengthy application process, which entailed a written statement and several phone calls with the BES, Joe said he was excited to have this trip confirmed. "I was really pleased when I found out I had been selected," he said. "Ever since I applied, I've just been researching the mountains, and I'm glad I'm able to put that to use. My parents and friends think it's such a good opportunity, although they also probably think I'm a bit mad." Coming from an outdoorsy family, Joe said he and his younger brother would often plan adventures. Their escapades included cycling the South Downs Way and inventing their own decathlons, which entailed skating, scooting and paddleboarding along the coastline. Knowing he wanted to do something to help fund his latest trip, Joe, who is studying at Peter Simmons College in preparation for a career in international relations, came up with the idea of climbing the equivalent height of his base camp in the mountains. After a few calculations, he worked out that would entail scaling St Catherine's Hill 43 times, which is 40 kilometres of hiking and 2,800 metres of climbing. He said, "I've done a few long walks in preparation, and I went up the hill the other day to make sure I'd worked it all out correctly. I'll be doing the whole lot, but my parents, brother and friends will join me for certain sections, which I'm sure will be a huge help." Joe has penciled in a provisional date of November the 5th for the climb and has set up a Just Giving page in hope of reaching his £1,000 goal. He'll then be leaving for Kyrgyzstan with the BES in the summer of next year, and there's a lovely photo of Joe standing at the foot of those hundreds of thousands of steps which zigzag up the side of St Catherine's Hill, and he's going to do that 43 times. I think once would be more than enough for me.
Rick, what have you got?
Food pantry digging deep as demand skyrockets. A community food pantry has seen a shocking 25% increase in users in just 1 month. The community food pantry at Unit 12 in Winnell, which is right next door to where we're currently recording this at the moment, it's in the same building where we are, the community food pantry had just under 100 people using the pantry within the first week of October as the cost of living crisis continues and the colder weather draws in. An average month sees approximately 270 to 300 members using the pantry in Winnell Valley Road. Starting from nothing in 2021, the food hub now has roughly 780 members, with around 70 to 80 users per week. But based on October figures, this looks set to soar. Unit 12's community outreach programme aims to help families manage and budget their food shop, providing about £15 shop of fresh, frozen and general foods for £5. Unlike food banks such as Winchester Basics Bank, There are no criteria of the economic circumstance for users, meaning anyone can use the hub to help make ends meet. After a career in various jobs, such as cleaning and caretaking, Elaine Chapman opened the pantry with Unit 12 in the height of the pandemic in January 2021, with a desire to help people in need. She said, My drive to start up the pantry was knowing there was a need and a hell of a lot of food waste that could be rehomed, as well as knowing you can help people in their greatest hour of need. This is what I committed to and what I said I would do, and so I'm going to keep seeing it through. We'll find a way to keep up with the demand. There's still plenty of people who can donate. As energy bills continue to rise, Elaine said there will need to be a discussion with the managers of the community and arts venue. The pantry organiser added, "I don't worry about things like that because I know something will always turn up. I have faith." Volunteer director at Unit 12, Councillor John Tippett Cooper, said, "Unit 12's community food pantry is getting busier and busier, but we have an amazing team running it, and we want people from all over the district to use us to help with their food budgeting over the next few increasingly difficult months. Like everywhere else, high energy costs are having an impact on Unit 12's budget, as well as the budgets of our family of community organisations we host at Unit 12. We will continue to be looking for help from the community in the form of donations of time and money, so we can keep delivering support to hundreds of households through the food pantry and Unit 12's other initiatives." And this is accompanied by a picture of the community food pantry volunteers, Stephanie, Caroline, Liz, and manager Elaine Chapman.
Spate of teens climbing city centre roofs. A recent increase in teenagers climbing on roofs in the city centre has been slammed by police. Officers in Winchester have reported multiple occasions of young people climbing on buildings and have said it is a waste of police time. The most recent incident occurred on October the 13th, when a group of teenagers climbed onto the roof of the disused River Park Leisure Centre. A police spokesman said, "On Thursday, October the 13th, some of you may have seen a flurry of emergency vehicles at River Park Leisure Centre. This was in response to a group of teenagers who had climbed up onto the roof of a building and managed to get themselves stuck. We attended, along with colleagues from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service, to help them back down to safety. Over recent weeks, we've had a number of reports of young people climbing onto roofs in the city centre. And put simply, it's not acceptable. Not only does it put people at risk of serious injury, but it is also an unnecessary use of emergency services time. We will continue to review reports of antisocial behaviour to help us identify those involved. If anyone witnesses this or any other type of antisocial behaviour, please report it to us by calling 101.
Hefty fees hikes will drive groups from ARC. Now, this is an item about the ARC, which is what the Winchester Discovery Centre is now called. Before that, it was just the library. And the ARC is being run by Hampshire Cultural Trust. A poetry group has accused the ARC of going against its own mission statement by imposing what it says are unaffordable prices. Hampshire Cultural Trust, HCT, is significantly increasing its tariffs for people hiring rooms at the ARC due to energy and staff costs, and to make the price of different rooms relative to their size. Poetry group Winchester Muse has been using the venue on a monthly basis since 2015, but will no longer be able to afford it. In a letter to Chief Executive Paul Sapwell, the group said, "We are now forced to conclude that HCT's own mission statement to provide a venue for local community groups and its website tagline, a place for arts, reading and community all under one roof, is nothing more than semantics. Make no mistake, driving Winchester Mews away from the Arc will profoundly affect many local people. Some will continue to access our group online, and a few others may look further afield to Southampton or London. However, a significant minority will lose out altogether. Taking into account a 50% discount for community hires and a further 10% discount for regular users, Winchester Mews would see their current fee of £60 a night for 3 hours in the Children's Library grow to more than £100. The poetry group is currently looking for a new home to move into in the new year." Hampshire Cultural Trust's Chief Executive, Paul Sapwell, said, "I appreciate the disappointment of Winchester Mews. However, it is important to reiterate the driving factors behind the charges for room hire at the Arc: staffing costs and energy bills. These increases apply to hire outside our normal daily opening hours when we open the building, providing staff and utilities so that a group can use it. Hampshire Cultural Trust is a charity, and we simply cannot open the Arc out of hours and run it at a loss. We completely value our hirers at the Arc, and they are just one part of our whole community here. The Arc is a warm space for those facing hardship with their energy bills this winter. We have free Wi-Fi available, as well as all the facilities that Winchester Library has to offer. These and the art and cultural activities here are what makes the Arc such a special and unique place." And that's accompanied by a picture of the poetry group, someone reading out one of the poems at a little stand, the others just watching. And below that, a picture of the Arc, and it must be one of the opening days because it's very full with people who just seem to be roaming around looking at everything.
Vintage buses back on the road. A special reception has been held to mark 100 years of an important bus route for Winchester. Following World War I, Winchester City Council started building the city's first council estate at Stanmore. Robert Chisnell of King Alfred Motor Services was approached to see if he would run a bus service to the new estate. The first bus was a Leyland RAF with a body built by Jas Bartle. It covered four routes every 2 hours, serving Stanmore via Rainley Road and also by way of Romsey Road, Shawford and Twyford via St Cross and Littleton, and Littleton via Wick and Flowerdown. Now, 100 years later, the Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOCAB, organised a special reception at Chesil House, which stands partly on the site of Mr Chisnell's original depot on the corner of Bridge Street and Chesil Street. The principal guests included two of Robert Chisnell's grandchildren, Richard Chisnell with his wife Maureen and Jenny Brockett, née Chisnell, as well as six former members of King Alfred's staff, namely John Bond, Mary Curry, John Glasgow, Nigel Sandy, Alex Wilson and Margaret Wilson. 100 years to the day, three of the oldest buses in the preserved King Alfred fleet reenacted the first day's operation, following the pattern of those first trips. Trustee David Morgan said, "Whether it's keeping in touch with former employees, collecting up all the surviving King Alfred buses from around the world, or restoring them so that the public can enjoy riding on them on special running days, FOCAB members are kept busy." With so many buses, the problem is always where to keep them. For more than 20 years, FOCAB has succeeded in keeping the whole fleet under cover, but in rented accommodation and always on short-term leases. FOCAB's great ambition, therefore, is to find an affordable permanent home for the collection in or near Winchester. Now, as it marks 100 years since the start of King Alfred's bus services in the city, FOCAB is redoubling its efforts to find a suitable site. And if you know of anywhere, I'm sure they'd be delighted to hear from you. And that piece is accompanied, of course, by a picture of three of their most elderly buses, one behind the other. And the one at the front is, I believe, the oldest of all, dating from about 1931, an old wooden-built Dennis, which some of you may have even travelled on in the past. I know it's been a regular at their open running days, going down from the Broadway to Bar End and back for many years now.
First birthday for hospice. Winchester Hospice has celebrated its first birthday and marked the occasion by inviting the community to go purple. The milestone marks a year since the hospice opened its doors back in September 2021, following more than 5 years of planning and a fundraising effort that raised £4.4 million. To celebrate, Winchester Hospice encouraged members of the community to go purple through wearing the colour and making a pound donation to its charity online. In their first year, the hospice team cared for more than 300 inpatients and provided bereavement support. Community services and therapies, as well as other means of care to those who need it in Winchester and surrounding villages. Winchester Hospice needs thousands of pounds to be raised each year to continue delivering care to patients and their families. Dr. Lara Alloway, Trustee at Winchester Hospice and Chief Medical Officer for Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust, said, "I am very proud of what our teams have achieved in the past year, opening the hospice and all its services, building a great team of staff and rehoming the beautiful Psalm 23 garden, which now lives in our grounds for patients and families to enjoy." Nick Vaughan, chairman of the Winchester Hospice fundraising charity, said, "To be celebrating 1 year of opening after the huge efforts of our community in getting the hospice open is just fantastic. We have come so far this year, and I want to thank each and every person who has been involved."
New City Pharmacy picks up plaudit. A Winchester pharmacy came out on top of the innovation category in the annual Independent Pharmacy Awards. Remedy Health, based in Southgate Street, was awarded Pharmacy Innovation of the Year at the 2022 Independent Pharmacy Awards. Manager and pharmacist Deborah Evans said, "As an independent new business in Winchester, being recognised by the Independent Pharmacy Awards nationally is hugely rewarding. We strive to offer our clients a wide range of high-quality health and well-being services to prevent illness and easy access to clinical support when they feel unwell. This award recognises the many different services as a private pharmacy that we now offer." In July, the growing independent pharmacy also picked up the New Business Award at Winchester Business Awards of Excellence 2022. The pharmacy, which opened in December 2021, having previously operated from a pop-up location offering COVID tests, has no plans to have an NHS contract and instead offers clinical services and prescriptions privately. Private services include a specialist menopause clinic, ear health, genetic cancer screening, blood testing and phlebotomy, travel health, COVID testing, allergy and food intolerance testing, medication reviews, sexual health screening, and weight management services.
Local slave cases, nearly 200. Almost 200 potential slavery victims were referred to Hampshire Constabulary in the last year, with the majority being aged 17 and under. Figures show there has been a rise in the number of referrals for support across the UK, and anti-slavery charities are now calling on the government to stop distracting attention from the real criminals. The latest Home Office figures show 185 potential modern slavery cases were referred to Hampshire Constabulary for investigation in the year to June, and of them, 111 were aged 17 and under. The total number is down from 226 the year before, but across the UK, modern slavery referrals for suspected victims have risen. A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary said, "Police and partners continue to work together to gather information around modern slavery and are encouraging people to report any suspicions they have regarding this particular crime type."
Mum warns of lethal curb at school bus stop. A mother has slammed the approval of a dropped curb near her children's school bus stop as potentially lethal. Ostlebury Parish Council has objected to drop curb application for a farm near the Ship Inn bus stop, used by Westgate school children and elderly residents. A parent who lives minutes away from the bus stop at the end of the main road has said that Hampshire County Council would not have approved the development if the area wasn't a bus terminus, which consequently changes the restrictions that would normally prevent a drop curb being allowed so close to a bus stop. The drop curb would allow access to the gateway to the field adjacent to the bus stop. The approval means the property owner can now seek a private contractor to carry out the work. Louise Taylor's children, aged 12 and 14, are among many pupils who use the stop to catch the bus to Westgate School. Louise, 46, said, "I am astounded that Hampshire County Council waved through this change without considering a better approach. A drop curb on this site is a potentially lethal threat to two of the most vulnerable groups of pedestrians, school children and elderly people." Executive Member for Highways Operation at Hampshire County Council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said it is fairly commonplace for vehicular access to be located near to a bus stop or other similar highway features. "I am aware that local residents and the parish council have raised some concerns about this particular site, but taking into account the county council's current guidelines for vehicular access, which includes a consideration for highway safety, there was no basis to refuse an application here."
Incredible fate. Care homes join forces for charity. A pair of Winchester care homes joined forces for a family-friendly fete in aid of an animal rescue charity. Dozens of visitors were welcomed by residents and staff from Colton Care's Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View, with the event raising more than £1,600, an amount described as incredible by Heart Wildlife Rescue. The fete, held on the green in Dyson Drive off Worthy Road, featured children's games, stall selling cakes, plants, handmade gift items, a coconut shy, a barbecue, a tombola, and the chance to see inside a fire engine. Abbots Barton resident Rosemary Smale, who welcomed visitors to her stall selling handmade glassware, said, "The fete was a great success and it was busy for the whole duration." When told the fete had raised £1,641, Paul Michael Reynolds, Heart Wildlife Hospital manager, said, "That is an incredible effort. Very well done." Heart Wildlife Rescue provides rescue, treatment and rehabilitation for wildlife from all over Hampshire and neighbouring counties. And there's a lovely picture with that of the tombola stall with Kirsty Sawyer and Emily Hudson holding up the bottles with the numbers on, both laughing and having a thoroughly good time.
Now, the next piece is a rather darker story entitled Jail for Jealous Alcoholic Who Strangled Girlfriend. An abusive and jealous man who slapped and strangled his ex-partner over claims she was cheating has been jailed. Carl Stanley Wood, an alcoholic with a violent past, twice grabbed his former girlfriend by the throat in a sequence of attacks while he was already under investigation by police. A witness statement read out to Winchester Crown Court on Monday, October the 24th, told of how the 48-year-old had left her full of anxiety and frightened to leave her flat following their short-lived relationship. Wood, who appeared in the dock wearing a grey tracksuit, was sentenced to 26 months behind bars. The court heard that on July the 3rd, Wood, of Campion Drive, Bishops Waltham, turned up at the victim's home having been released from custody just the previous day for allegedly assaulting her. After spending time in her room drinking, an argument broke out between the pair after he had accused her of sleeping with another man. She tried to escape to the garden where he followed her and grabbed her by the throat. The police were called and he was arrested and later bailed. On July the 10th, Wood, who had been drinking heavily, once again gained access to her flat, where he grabbed and smacked her across the chin. He left and continued to message her, returning the next morning when he launched a third attack, strangling her for the second time and bruising her arms by pinning her to the bed. She managed to escape and called the police by telling him she was going to buy tobacco. When officers arrived, they found Wood hiding in the wardrobe. In a statement, she said she couldn't believe Wood was released by the police and described a lack of faith in the justice system. She said she felt scared to say no to him and that he would often ring her and tell her he was on his way, even when he was on bail. The court was told Wood had a history of similar offending, which included strangling and punching a former partner between 2014 and 2016. Mitigating, Emma Hayfield said he had expressed sincere remorse and regret for his behaviour. However, sentencing, Judge Susan Evans KC said, "The effect of what you have done is that she, the victim, no longer feels safe in her own home. She has suffered from anxiety and her mental health has declined." The judge described Wood as a jealous individual with a lack of emotional control and propensity for using violence, often by way of strangulation.
Climate tops youth agenda. A Winchester College student fulfilled his pledge as the city's youth MP by hosting a Hampshire Climate Conference. Hampshire Youth Parliament hosted an eco-conference recently in association with the Final Straw Foundation at Winchester College. The event welcomed 250 state school pupils and staff to the boarding school and sixth form for speeches and workshops based on climate change and sustainability. Speakers included Gosport MP Caroline Dynage and representatives from Plastics Charity, the Final Straw Foundation, the David Shepherd Wildlife Trust and other community climate groups. Sixth form pupil Dev Sharma stood for the UK Youth Parliament earlier this year. The eco event met the current Winchester Youth MP's manifesto promise of hosting a climate conference in Hampshire. The aim of the day was to give pupils a better understanding of the causes and impacts of climate change, plastic pollution, and the importance of sustainability. Children had the opportunity to get creative in a fast fashion workshop and explore solutions to plastic ingestion by sea creatures. Head of Geography, Dr. Alex Clayton, said we were delighted to work with Hampshire Youth Parliament and Final Straw Foundation to provide an opportunity for pupils across Hampshire to spend the day focusing on these vital issues.
Case against ex-surgeon is dropped. An 80-year-old retired surgeon has had his case dropped after he allegedly abused NHS emergency workers. Peter Ashcroft of Compton Street, Compton, near Winchester, was charged with using threatening behaviour towards an ambulance crew who had parked outside his house, blocking the carriageway to attend an emergency on September the 7th, 2021. He appeared at Basingstoke Magistrates Court last Monday, October the 24th. A trial was due to start, but magistrates dismissed the case after deciding it was not in the public interest to charge the 80-year-old. At around 8:30 a.m. on the day of the incident, two NHS emergency workers were called to a property in Godwin's Fields to attend to a pensioner named Marina, who was very ill and has since died. During this visit, the two female NHS first responders said they were abused by Mr. Ashcroft, who was annoyed the ambulance had parked outside his house. The court was waiting to receive more evidence from the ambulance service, but has since decided to withdraw all charges. He had previously pleaded not guilty on March the 22nd this year.
Hampshire towns make it into top places to live. A popular woman's lifestyle website has declared the launch of its 2023 Top 250 Best Places to Live, with Winchester coming third, Romsey ninth, and Alsford tenth. Muddy Stilettos recently announced the launch of its 2023 Top 250 Best Places to Live, which covered more regions than previous lists, with 50 more recommendations than its 2022 annual list. It draws upon its insight into the 28 most sought-after counties in England, guiding potential buyers to the local hotspots and up-and-coming areas, including 10 best places to live in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight in 2023. So, the named best places to live in 2023 in Hampshire were Odiham, Petersfield, Winchester, Yarmouth, Cowes, Lymington, Hartley, Whitney, Southsea, Romsey, and Alsford. Hero Brown, the founder and editor-in-chief of Muddy Stilettos, said, "When people decide to move, they're searching for more than just a house. They want a home, a lifestyle that works for them and their family, and if they're strategic, a long-term investment too. Our 2023 Top 250 Best Places to Live guide will give them that extra reassurance that they need to make their search easier in these difficult economic times."
Following from a previous report on roof climbing, police act on social incidents, antisocial incidents. A dispersal order has been authorised in Winchester city centre following a rise in antisocial behaviour. The order ran from Monday to 1:40 p.m. yesterday, covering Chesil and Tower Street car parks, High Street, Orams Arbour and River Park Leisure Centre. Over the course of the last few weeks, police have received reports of groups gathering, playing loud music and behaving in an intimidating manner. The Chronicle recently reported how a surge in drug use, graffiti and criminal damage has been blighting Chesil multi-storey car park. Police and fire crews also had to rescue a group of teenagers from the roof of River Park Leisure Centre after they climbed the building and got stuck. The dispersal order gives officers the power to order a person to leave the area with no return within the specified time period. Those who refuse to comply with the order are committing a criminal offence and liable for arrest. It also provides officers with the power to seize items such as music systems and skateboards. Individuals who are aged under 16 will be taken to their home addresses and follow-up work will be done with parents. Inspector John Strilby said, while it is only a small minority of people who have become involved in antisocial behaviour, we know that the impacts of this can be far-reaching and have considerable effects on the lives of local residents.
City gym crew hit the piste in round-the-clock ski run. Club members from a Winchester gym put on their ski wear to get behind Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Holloway Health and Fitness hosted a 24-hour ski-a-thon for members to clock up the miles and raise money for breast cancer support to mark Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Starting at 9 a.m. last Friday, members signed up for 30-minute time slots on the Ski Erg, a cardio machine that exercises the full body and mimics the movements of a cross-country skier. By the end of the challenge on Saturday morning, the club had skied 238,185 metres, raising more than £1,500 from donations, a cake sale and a raffle. Prizes were donated by local businesses such as Hotel Duvin, Montezuma's and the Wild Bunch Florists. Gym owner Owen Holloway said, "A lot of our members have been touched by breast cancer in one way or another, personally or through friends and family. It was important to mark Breast Cancer Awareness Month by coming together as a community and taking on the challenge to raise money and awareness." Holloway Health and Fitness opened its doors at the start of 2022 and hosts regular social events as well as organising educational workshops and expert evenings.
Zoo tornado like something from a movie. A weekend storm has caused widespread disruption across Hampshire. Trees were toppled near Marwell Zoo at Colden Common after a mini tornado was reported. On Monday, the zoo was closed to casual visitors following damage to the car park. Only those who had pre-booked were granted access. Trains between Romsey and Salisbury were delayed after a tree fell on the track. Marwell Zoo Chief Executive James Cretney said, "I couldn't believe it. The car park looked like something from a Hollywood movie set. Such was the force of the tornado."
Christmas is coming as city's festive market takes shape. Winchester's popular Christmas market is preparing to return this November, with workmen putting up huts around the inner close of the cathedral. 8 huts have been completed at Winchester Cathedral's inner close, with crews from the Hascos Enterprises, a long-serving partner of the market, to ensure the market is ready by November the 14th. Recognised as one of the best in Europe, the market will open for business on Friday, November the 18th, and will run until Thursday, December the 22nd. As previously revealed, the market will be returning without the popular ice rink. Tim Haslett and Neil Crosgrove of Hascos Enterprises said, "This is the biggest job of the year. We've got a really good crew of guys here. If it wasn't for COVID, this would have been our 15th year. We get it done, but we all have a good laugh as well." Around 118 German-inspired chalets will line the ancient cathedral walls, with pop-ups selling a range of seasonal gifts, food and drink. The site will be similar to last year, which saw the introduction of a larger food court and a community stage for free gigs. And there's a lovely picture here of 3 of the huts in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral and a close-up of one of the diggers starting work.
New burger bar down to business. Winchester's newest takeaway has announced its official opening date after 2 months of delays, Burpin Ron's Burger Bar has announced it will open next Thursday, November the 3rd, after originally planning to open back in the summer. Owner Nordine Zahr, 36, from Winchester, was forced to push the opening date back due to logistical problems. Burpin Ron's is set to bring a total of 14 new jobs to Winchester. The Burger Bar on Stockbridge Road was named after late Winchester character Ron Purse, who was known for burping into people's faces and pushing his decorated pram around during the annual hat fair and at Christmas time. The takeaway will offer a menu of burgers, fries, shakes, desserts and drinks. Nordine said, "There aren't any other burger restaurants in Winchester that hit the spot. We're using locally sourced ingredients. It's all about good quality food that we want to provide because Winchester is just missing a good burger joint with great sides." And there's a picture of the shop front, bright red, with Burpin Ron's across the top of it, and underneath that, opening soon.
On that note, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to Sue and her editing team, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupard.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And John Parvin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.